tell me where in the world is
crime in San Diego?
Welcome back to Where in the World is Crime in San Diego.
Welcome back, guys. We missed you.
We definitely missed you guys. We've been away for a little bit. We had to take a week and a half off, kind of seems like. Life happens. You know, life things happens. We're podcasters, but we still have life. We have, you know, life events happening. And we had our little personal
life got a little crazy, but we're getting back to normal. And we are so excited to be back because I can honestly say I miss this feeling.
I definitely did too. It was great. So we're back and we're back to our regularly scheduled program here. So we have another case for you guys today. And oh my gosh, it is a doozy. This one is insane.
This week's case is honestly crazy. Like the more I dug, the more I was like, this rabbit hole's never going to end.
Yeah, it just completely just was like, jaw dropper.
I can't wait to hear what you guys think about this one because it honestly shocked me completely.
Yeah. So this week's episode is called Burner Phone.
And our sources for this week are the OC Weekly, Orange County Register, NBC7, ABC10, LA Times, San Diego Union Tribune, and NBC.
So let's introduce to you guys Dane Williams.
Oh, wait, I forgot my disclaimers. Oh my God, so sorry. So disclaimers are murder, kidnapping, sexual abuse, and date rape, which that one's a little sketchy on how we're using it, but it'll make more sense into the story.
Yeah, I can't believe you forgot our disclaimers.
I know, good my
call.
Bad.
Good call. So Dane Williams. Now Dane Williams is from Huntington Beach, which is like just north of San Diego. His parents, Valen and Jim Williams, he was 23 years old in 2008. Young kid. So he was a surfer. He was a snowboarder. Your typical Southern California coastal beach town boy. Young man. But what was really cool is that he worked for Hurley. Now, Hurley is a very popular, like, action sport, you know, apparel company. They're very famous for a lot of those kind of...
In that time frame, they were huge. They were, like, name brand.
Oh, there it's... You would look at Quiksilver, Hurley...
Hollister.
Rip Curl, you know, Roxy. Those kind of brands. If you're into, like, surfing, you knew who those brands were.
Yeah.
So he worked as an intern for Hurley. And... He was also going to college, you know, I could not figure out what exactly he was going into college for. Maybe it was just general, you know, education or general, you know, credits, but he was an intern and he was super excited because that was like a major gig. That's what he was into.
Like his first like big boy job, technically. That's not like a restaurant or like a fast food place or.
It wasn't a dead end job. It was a potential career job. So he was very healthy. He was fit. He was family oriented. He, you know, like I said, loved his internship for Hurley. And it's said that he found his niche in life because of finding this job. It's like, what more can you ask for? It's him surfing and him working for a surf company.
Well, he honestly looked like a poster boy for the entire company. Like,
yeah. And then, you know, everybody talks about him, how he loved to have a good time. He was a very fun person to be around. Like he just had like this persona that he was very welcoming.
Well, through his photos, you can see like the smile, you can see like the contagious energy almost.
Totally agree. You know, and it's like, that's how like the beach community is. Like they're very tight knit. He was like his life was great. Like things were going amazing. He acted fearless. He, you know, was sensitive and he was really kind. From what his parents would describe him as.
Aww.
He was, you know, authentic. He had this vibe. He was always, you know, it was like he always wanted to be around this guy. He always wanted to be around Dane. You know, like everything was just kind of, everything was perfect. So let's jump into 2008, and it's in January. And here in San Diego, there is a action sports, you know, convention where there's all these major retailers that are gathering for a major convention here in San Diego, which is very popular. And this is Dane's first big gig.
Where, for those that aren't familiar, San Diego does have a convention center in downtown.
Oh,
where a lot of major events are held. It's right across the street from our baseball park, Petco Park.
It's everybody knows this one. The most famous convention that is held yearly is Comic-Con.
Oh, yeah.
Over 100,000 people attend this 4-day event. You know, and that's not including the free events throughout town.
Yeah.
Like we're talking about Gaslamp. We're talking about Mission Valley. You know, Petco Park.
Right. Literally every corner of San Diego is covered in comics.
Every hotel's booked. Everything is like all the Airbnbs. Everything's like, it's insane. Don't come to Comic-Con in July.
Actually, it's in Comic-Con. Oh, is it June or July?
It's in July.
Oh, okay.
It's like mid to late July. But Dane was excited because he's like, dude, this is my first major gig. This is my first business trip. I'm going to rock this. So it's January 25th, the first day. It's a Friday, and it's the first day of the convention. Everything wraps up, and Dane goes out with friends to go celebrate the convention. Like, that's what all these companies do. They have these big, massive after parties in downtown at specific bars, or people just go out and enjoy the nightlife. So this is where we also introduce two friends. So we have Amy and Jessica, who live in Orange County, that come down to come visit not only Dane, but a group of friends that also work for Hurley. Amy and Jessica don't work for Hurley, but they just associate with friends who work with Hurley and stuff like that.
Yeah, right? Like tagging along.
Yeah. So they meet up with Dane and about six other friends at the House of Blues in the Gaslamp area.
Mm-hmm.
So at the Gaslamp, it's around like 11. They have drinks. They're having fun. And this is where they decide to go to another bar. So it's a big party. It's like six of them. So they need multiple Ubers to get around. So they decide to go to the Hard Rock after the House of Blues. So they arrive in separate cars. And when they get to the Hard Rock, Jessica and Amy, they go up to a rooftop bar,
mm-hmm,
where they meet up with some of their friends. They start drinking. Dane is nowhere to be found because Dane is with a coworker or associate, Brandon. Brandon works for Hurley, and Brandon is showing Dane like the ropes of Hurley. It's like Brandon's been around in the company. So he's like, hey, let me take you under my wing and let me show you what this whole, you know, surfing,
like networking, meeting other exactly people. Yeah.
Yeah. Because Dane's young and Brandon's been around. So he's like taking it under his wing and just showing the ropes. It's like, cool. But Amy and Jessica have no idea that Dane and Brandon show up at the Hard Rock, but there's a bar downstairs. So they're at the same location, but they're just in different opposite ends of the building.
Oh, okay.
One's in the rooftop, one's at the floor. Now, it's around 1:30, and this is where, like, Amy decides to start messaging, hey, where's Brandon? Where's Dane? They must have, like, split off and gone with other friends. But she wasn't worried or concerned because there's like, multiple groups of friends, so, like, they probably met up with someone, and they're hanging out with them. Cool. I'm going to reach out and see, like, where they're at. So she texts them. No response. She goes back to the hotel room. That's somewhere in downtown San Diego. There's no Dane. There's no Brandon to be found. So Amy decides to drive home because she's not having a hotel down in San Diego. So she goes back home.
I mean, I'm not surprised. They're in their early 20s. They're not exactly like you're balling with money. So if it's not like a company paid hotel, you're probably not going to have the funds to pay for that.
No, totally not. So it's the next morning and Jessica gets a text message like midday saying, hey, I haven't heard from Dane. Have you heard from Dane? And it's like in a group text. It was sent out to multiple people. So Jessica starts, you know, being concerned because it's like, oh my gosh, like where is Dane? Like, the last time I saw him was that we were supposed to be at the Hard Rock, and that's the last time I saw him. Like, this was like 11:30, 1 o'clock, between that window.
Right.
And, you know, Amy starts getting the same text. I have not seen Dane. Has anyone seen Dane? Brandon goes to Dane's hotel room, and he gets access into his hotel, and he sees that Dane's belongings are still in the room. Nothing has been misplaced or scavenged or anything like that. It looked like he wasn't even in his room. So people are probably thinking, like, oh, you know what? He might have, you know, passed out somewhere. His phone must have died.
Crashed in another friend's room. Yeah. You never know.
So that's what their friend Amy was thinking, that, you know what? His phone must have died. So that's why his alarm didn't go off. So he has no way of contacting us. But then as time goes on, she feels more that, hey, I think it's necessary for Dane's mom, Fallon, to be aware of the situation. So Amy calls Dane's mom and lets her know about, hey, it's been this many hours since we've heard of Dane. We don't know where he is. So panicked, Dane's mom, Fallon, calls his phone. It goes straight to voicemail. She texts. She's concerned. It's a concerned parent. Jim's also concerned.
Well, yeah, your kid goes away to his first business trip. He's still, I mean, technically very young.
Yeah.
Of course you're freaked out. He was drinking the night before. You don't know if he's like hurt somewhere.
Oh, totally. So both parents spend all Saturday just messaging back and forth with people that they know that are in San Diego. Like, where is Dane? Please let me know. Like, concerned. Like, I was like, as any parent would be, it's like, where is my son? Like Mel Gibson. You don't get that reference. Dang it.
I know. You always strike out. I don't know why.
So it's Saturday, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's multiple days to the convention. Dane does not show up to work. And this is very strange because this is so uncharacteristically from Dane, because he was so excited for it being his first convention that he did not want to miss out on it. But yet he was a no-show to day two. So this is where it's like really like, okay, so we have no contact. We don't know where Dane is. No one's seen Dane.
It's ringing all the alarm bells.
Exactly. Like all these red flags are going off. It's like, where is Dane? Where is he? It's now Sunday, and it's about 30 hours since anybody has heard or seen of Dane Williams. And this is where Fallon and Jim Williams file a missing persons report with San Diego Police Department. Friends and family, they print out flyers. And it's amazing because what they were able to do is they were able to take a photo of that night from Friday night with the shirt that he was wearing. And what he was wearing was a black shirt with white stripes going across that said Hurley on the upper left corner of his shirt. And it's like they were able to post missing person poster all throughout downtown San Diego, Gaslamp Quarter, to try to find any whereabouts of Dane.
Like literally the exact image of what they're looking for, like to the T.
Exactly. They had a description of the shirt. They had the picture of the shirt and what he was wearing, you know? So it's like, oh, wow. Like, this is okay. This has to help. Jim, Dane's father, goes to like the marina dock areas because since he's a surfer, maybe he met up with someone that's surfing and maybe someone in the surf world might have seen him, just to try to see if like there's any potential leads, because there is nothing. Nothing is popping up where it's like, this is where he could be. This is where he's at. 2 days have gone by since anybody has seen or heard of Dane Williams. And there is no clues. There's no information. Police are probably thinking, hey, maybe he wanted to disappear. And maybe he just wanted to just leave or go.
Which is usually the assumption when they're young, is that they just want to like up and start a new life and be like super adventurous. But it's usually never the answer.
No, because you look at it, it's like, dude, he was super excited about his first gig. So,
but I get it. Devil's advocate. You never know. There's no evidence either way. We still got to figure it out.
Yeah, you try and you don't leave any no stones unturned.
No stones left unturned. But yeah, I get where you're going.
Right? Did I say that wrong? I said that wrong.
A little bit. You flipped it. So 6 to 7 miles away, outside of the gas lamp, there is a place called City Heights. Anybody that lives in San Diego might be familiar with that area of town.
Mm-hmm.
So there was this random alley where it wasn't exactly like... There's a lot of areas of San Diego that are heavily polluted with like homeless people. This wasn't... This alley wasn't easily accessible to people in the public. So it wasn't one of those where you see like tents and you would expect to see a lot of homeless people around.
Yeah, what's that word they use? Transients.
Transients. There we go.
Area. That's what they use.
But it's 7:30 in the morning and this person is out walking his dog, having a healthy morning. I'm jealous. And he's, you know, just kind of taking everything in and he sees a homeless person, which catches his eye because, again, it's not common. And as he goes up to like wake him up and see if he's okay, which I'm surprised because most of the time if you see someone, you just like let them be. But something about it like caught his eye where he's like, oh, let me just like make sure they're okay. And he notices it like there's no like movement. Like when somebody's laying down, you can see like they're breathing and you're like, oh, okay, they're just asleep. Or you can hear them like snoring or something.
Mm-hmm.
But it was just so still that I think it must have like been an intuition. And he realizes there's like no reaction. There's nothing. He goes over top it. No movement. And as he gets closer to the body and he touches it, he realizes it's cold and there's no pulse. And like, I can't imagine what it feels like for someone to find a body. Like, it's just, oh, I feel bad for them without even knowing what that's like.
It's scary to think, you know, you're just going about your business and that this is something that you come across from. Like,
well, there's no preparation. Like, you literally just stumble upon it and you have to like process it all at the same time.
Exactly. It's very terrifying.
So he starts to take note of like everything that's happening and he realizes that this body is like wrapped up in like this rug or blanket, whatever it is. He starts to notice that it's like he's rolled into it as in like, I guess like in the movies where you see the body and then like it gets tacoed in there and like there's no way somebody would have done it themselves.
Yeah. It's like the way that I can imagine it is like when you're playing like as a child, you play with blankets and like, oh, roll me up like a burrito.
Yeah.
That's exactly like the way that I would picture it.
So he obviously calls 911. They get down here. They start to take everything in. And the one thing that was really prominent at the scene, because that's not a heavily polluted alley like a lot of the alleys in San Diego, the tire tracks were still very fresh and very clear. Mm. So that was like the first tip they got. Then they start to notice the blanket is covered in a lot of pet hair, like severely covered.
Mm-hmm.
Which is like, I mean, it's kind of a helpful and it's not because, I mean, everybody in San Diego has pets, so that's not a surprise. But it's also somewhere to start. The only problem is they couldn't tell if it was a dog or a cat, or you can't even tell what kind of pet yet because you don't have much to go off of.
Yeah, but it's like animal fur.
Yes. The body was wearing a Hurley shirt that matched the description of the photo that Dane was last seen in. So as much as they visibly felt like they had their person, they still had to identify the body. And once they called, they took the fingerprints, they look at the photo, they match everything else up, and they realize that it is confirmed to be Dane. His parents are notified, and right away, they knew that it was foul play. Like, everything about this looked sketch.
You can't really roll your own self into, like, a blanket, like how Dane was found. You know?
Oh, no, your arms are literally attached to the sides of your body. How would you even?
It's like as if you were mummified.
You know? I guess so.
Literally. Like that's, yeah. Like you, that's when you were like, okay, you know what? This was done by someone.
Someone else had a hand in this.
There was foul play into
this. For sure. So the autopsy revealed that Dane had died 1 to 3 days ago. Which would mean that he passed away literally the night he disappeared or shortly thereafter.
Yeah.
At the time, the cause of death was still unknown, but they did do a toxicology test because visibly there was no like gunshot wounds. There was no like lacerations to the neck. There was nothing where you can see and be like, oh, this is exactly how he died. Like even if like you get hit in the head, like you can see blood or you can see injury. Like there was, he looked completely normal, which means it has to be something from the inside that went wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So they start going through the night and they start looking for any eyewitnesses that were out that night. Keep in mind, this convention is huge.
Yeah.
And there is multiple companies and they were all mixed and matched. Like they're bar hopping from place to place. There was no segregation of like, oh, this company's here and that company's there. Like it was just free for all.
No. And like how we explained earlier, like in downtown San Diego, the Gaslamp Quarter is just filled. There's an abundance of bars. There's an abundance of clubs, dive bars, restaurants. I mean, you look
everything
is there. And it's just insane how it's amazing for us because we live here, but it's like, it's crazy to think that when there's a convention going on,
oh, it's packed.
It's amazing how busy those streets are. And especially after 1:30, when everybody clears out, because that's when last call is at 1:30, they kick you out before 2.
Bars close at 2.
The streets are completely filled as if it was like a parade or
a carnival. Yeah.
It's just all the streets are insane. And it's like, wow.
Well, they start with the person that last saw him alive, for sure, which was Brandon.
Yeah.
So Brandon stated that they parted ways at 1:30. So investigators were starting from the beginning. At first, they were pretty like open to whatever his story was. And they're like, okay, like everything's matching up with like what we've heard.
Mm-hmm.
But then Brandon says that Dane didn't look intoxicated, which is really weird because if they started drinking early in the day, or at least around 10 p.m.
Yeah.
Until 1:30, that's a pretty good window of time where he was constantly drinking to say that he was not intoxicated.
I mean, yeah, even if you're drinking one drink per hour, if you started at 10 to 1:30, you're still having anywhere between 4 to 5 drinks.
Yeah, for him to say like, oh, he was coherent, he was talking fine, like I didn't notice he was drunk. Everybody should have been some level of drunk if you're out that long and if you're all drinking and, you know, partaking.
Yeah.
So that definitely raised some eyebrows for them, where they started to look into him a little bit deeper. Lucky for him, there was already cameras. So they were able to check the footage from the hotel he was staying at. And they verified that he did enter the hotel around 1:30. And he did not come back out until the following morning. They also matched the hotel with the bar that he left to show that he did leave alone and not with Dane. So he was cleared as a suspect. And then they found the footage of Dane leaving the Hard Rock. And from various angles, it wasn't, I mean, obviously the cameras are really grainy, it's CCTV.
Yeah.
But he didn't look like he was not intoxicated. He didn't look like he was okay.
He didn't look sober.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like that part of his story kind of seemed a little odd. If you're saying at 1:30, he seemed fine enough to like leave alone and like you weren't concerned about him. But then a couple hours later, he's like trashed.
Yes.
Like.
Yeah, there's something there.
Yeah, like, something happened in between.
Maybe Brandon was trying to like downplay, like not to make either him, Dane, look bad in the light, or either just trying to downplay the situation or something. Maybe he was really trying just to cover some certain like.
Or then sides. Again, maybe he really didn't have that clear of a memory considering he was drinking, like. Maybe in his head, everything did look fine.
True. That, I can see that happening.
So they find the very last image of Dane is him turning a corner, swaying, and then he's never seen again. No other camera picks him up.
And around what time was this?
3 a.m.
So from 3 a.m., the Friday.
So 1:30, the last statement is he was okay. He wanted to stay at the bar. I wanted to go home. I was tired. I left him. He looked fine. He wasn't slurring. I could understand what he was saying. He was standing by himself. He was good.
So it was Friday night into Saturday morning, 3 a.m. That's the last time we ever see Dane alive.
On camera.
On camera. Wow. Okay.
So 2 months later, because toxicology reports take forever, that has not changed.
Mm-hmm.
The report comes back. I can't say the name. Diazepam.
Diazepam.
Quinine blood alcohol was 0.17%, which is really high.
Yes.
This affects the central nervous suppressant. So they make you basically unable to move. They relax your muscles.
Yeah, you're not able. It paralyzes you, essentially. That's what it does. our earlier episodes with Jay Jenks and Merriman.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
She used the same diazepam medication on him.
Oh, I forgot about that.
That's exactly
the same one.
The exact same medication. And she also used alcohol, where
them fused together only makes it.
It takes it up to a whole nother level where it shuts your nervous system. So it's wild. Like he must have been drugged.
Well, that's pretty much where investigators are at this point.
Yeah. Okay. Because
that's the only thing that makes sense that wouldn't show physically. Mm-hmm. So two women came forward and gave a statement that they saw him around 3 a.m. and he was intoxicated and he was up against a wall. And they asked him if he was okay. They didn't want to call the cops because they were afraid he'd get arrested for public intoxication. Which, I've been there, I get it, but it's also like, could have saved him.
Yeah, and I feel like, you know, maybe if the cops probably would have approached him, they would have been, if he would have been coherent enough to be like, oh, I'm from out of town, I'm you know, I'm lost, then maybe the cops would have been like, well, where are you staying at?
Well, then again, would cops have realized the symptoms of him being drugged versus him being drunk?
No, I don't think so. It's hard. It's really hard to tell.
Exactly. Especially considering you're in the middle of gas lamp at 3 a.m. You're leaving a bar. Like,
yeah,
they wouldn't be their first guess.
And I feel like what the cops would have eventually done is put him in the drunk tank for 12 hours. And it's like, just sleep it off.
Which, who knows what would have happened, but maybe it would have been a better result. Mm-hmm. So the girls leave with their friends. They decide to just let him be. The one thing they can say for sure is that he was not wearing a beanie when they last saw him. And he was not wearing a beanie in the footage that from him leaving the Hard Rock.
Okay.
But he was wearing a beanie when they found him.
Mm.
So that beanie becomes literally like the biggest mystery. Like, where did it come from? How did it get here? And why is it here?
Yes. I totally agree.
So they decide to go get the beanie and test it because they're expecting to find whoever wore it before had to have left some DNA. But what they found was sperm.
On the beanie.
On the beanie.
Yeah.
And it did not belong to Dane.
Well, yeah.
The last thing I would expect to find.
Was that like Me, Myself, and Irene status with Ben Stiller? Like, it goes up on his ear? Like, that doesn't happen.
What?
Once again, you don't get the reference.
No, okay. Not at all. So investigators took the sample and they ran it through CODIS, hoping that it came back with some sort of hit.
Mm-hmm.
And no dice. No hit.
No hit.
Nothing in the system. So they're right back to square one, where they are.
They have their hands up in the air.
You're hoping for a tip to come in. You're waiting for the next big thing. His family is literally looking for any avenue. So they actually go to a medium to get some help. And the medium tells them that the man was from Asian descent and gay, and he drove a white van. The San Diego Police Department decides to run with this because it's the only thing they got right now. So they're like, okay, let's meet with the psychic and let's see what we can get from it. So they're told to look for Pacific Islander, maybe Tongan, and fishes out at the San Diego Marina. So the detective hears this and he thinks of someone that kind of fits the profile. He's like, I have someone that might be a good starting point. Let's go talk to him.
Mm-hmm.
So they head over and a few things line up and starts to be like, well, you know, he was out on this night, like starts to look really potential.
Okay.
And then all of a sudden they realize that he has an alibi. They have to clear him. Need to start over. By this point, we're in July of 2008. And we started the story in
January.
So it's been quite a bit.
6 months, yeah.
Hurley International decides to double the reward for their intern, Dane Williams, to $20,000, which I think is really cool.
Well, yeah, because you have a company who is, you know, putting their own money to find, you know, more information.
But an intern, like, that's really cool. Yeah. That they care about one of their employees that wasn't even like a long term or a high position. It's just nice to see that they're counting him as a human and not just
at the very bottom, at entry level. Like, it's really cool. I think it's really cool that they did that.
Like, all of a sudden, I want to go buy everything Hurley. Just kidding.
I have Hurley stuff myself, too.
So the case, even with that $20,000 award, still sits cold for a year and a half. But in August of 2009, August 12th to be exact, the homicide team gets news that there was a DNA hit from a different case that matches the beanie.
The sperm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I prefer to call the beanie than the sperm. But yeah.
Well, the matching the sperm on the beanie.
Yes. So this victim was drugged, and the police think that it's the exact same killer striking again. So at this point, they're like, we have a serial rapist. And obviously his tactics are the same.
Wow.
Drug them, rape them, and then either leave them for dead or murder them, depending on where it goes. This guy was a Navy corpsman and was drugged and sexually assaulted. He was in the gas lamp area when he asked for a cigarette from an Asian man. Seems harmless, right? I mean, it's kind of like a bro. He's in his mid-30s, no red flags, and he offered to show him around the city. And most people in the military are either new to San Diego or don't really have time to explore San Diego. Mm-hmm. I'm sure it's hard to make friends, so you're just like, yeah, what's the harm? Like, sounds cool. So during the night, the victim developed a headache, and the suspect stopped to buy alcohol and headache pills, which probably weren't going to help with what he had already given him.
Yeah.
He took them, and shortly after, he blacked out and woke up in an unfamiliar place. He noticed that his underwear was missing, and he had no idea where it was.
Yeah.
And like that feeling of like, just
the unknown of like, what just happened?
Well, yeah. One being like, so trusting and being like, oh, cool. Like, let's just go, you know, like, you just think it's like, it's so hard to make friends now because of this. The trust issues.
It's scary because it's like you're absolutely correct. It's terrifying to know that you're trying to be a friend or you're trying to be in a new city and you're like, oh my gosh, this I'm so cool. Thank you for helping me. I'm like, it's so nice to meet you. And then this happens.
Yeah, like it was almost too easy. And it's like, oh, because it was too easy.
Mm-hmm.
So somehow he managed to get out of the house and caught a bus back all the way to Camp Pendleton, which Camp Pendleton is not close to the gas lamp.
No, you're looking at about 45 to 50 miles from downtown gas lamp to Camp Pendleton.
But the fact that even drugged, he was able to like become coherent enough to escape and get out. And the fact that he was brave enough to call and to like report this, because a lot of people tend to like either feel embarrassed or ashamed or like don't want to come forward because they don't want to relive that.
Yeah. Well, even then, like it's an extremely traumatizing, event. And just knowing that this happened to you, it's completely embarrassing.
The bravery in that, though, is really awesome. Like that doesn't go over my head.
Mm-hmm.
So they gathered all the evidence from him and the results revealed that the semen matched the same as the murder found at Dane's, or the sample found at Dane's murder scene. So the victim said that the suspect went by the name of Phil, which finally gave them a starting point. But again, that name is not necessarily uncommon.
No. And it's like, it's probably abbreviated for something.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it could be a fake name for all we know, but at least it's a starting point.
Yeah.
So they know that they have a very short window and they have to act quick, especially because the guy had given the victim a phone number. I don't know if this was like before or during the exchange where like, hey, we should be buddies. But either way, he got a phone number.
There's a phone number to go off of.
So they obtain the search warrants and they find out that the phone belongs to a burner phone. Another dead.
Like, wow.
But they don't give up, which I'm really proud of them. They decide to start calling every single number that the burner phone had called out.
Oh, cross-referencing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
They figured at some point, somebody's got to give something up. So finally, they talk to a woman who says that the phone number belonged to her nephew.
Phil Long Wen.
The middle part. But yeah, we can skip the middle part. It's a very long name.
It's Phil Long Wen.
Very, very ethnic. But he went by the name of Phil. He was a Vietnamese male born in 1970 And in 2008, 2009, he was about 38 to 39 years old.
Okay.
So he had a pharmaceutical background. Interesting. And his knowledge with medicine, he had learned it from attending school in Missouri. No, nothing's connecting yet.
Well, it's like you have Phil. You have the pharmaceutical background and that he was attending school. I mean, this, you're connecting the dots. Already those three points right there, this person knows. He's like a chemist. He knows how to use.
Well, just to help you feel a little more sure.
Okay.
He also had a couple cases of sexual assault. And they hadn't been prosecuted yet, but they had been filed through the school. So this was enough for him to feel uncomfortable and leave school before finishing.
Wow. Okay. So yeah, this is our suspect. We need to get a hold of Phil for sure.
So in the background check, they find that the address that pops up is also his mother's. Surprise.
Okay.
He's 38, so he's still living with mom.
Living with mom. Mommy issues. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
And he is an employee of the San Diego Medical Supply Clinic.
All right.
How convenient.
Yeah. It's like, what coincidence, right?
Maybe. I don't know. He might have something to do with it. Who knows?
Is there any more?
So just a block and a half away from where Dane's body was discovered, the phone records show that he called a rental company. And the address shows the Dodge Caravan was rented. And this Dodge Caravan had tires that matched the scene. They matched the exact tire track that was at the scene of Dane's murder.
But also remember too, like the medium said that we were looking for someone that was Tongan, right? Asian descent, pretty much.
And a white van.
And a white van. And that they were gay. So it's like, these things, like, this Phil guy was raping, sexually assaulting heterosexual men.
And not to mention, these are the two that came forward or that got found. Mm-hmm. Not to mention the potential amount of people that went through this experience and did not speak up or did not come forward.
Exactly. That's true. I didn't think about that. That's wild.
Okay. Especially if he already has like a hunting ground, which is the gas lamp, and there's plenty of meat there for him to hunt.
Yes.
So September of 2009, detectives find out that Phil's Infiniti is being serviced at an auto shop. And they set up surveillance, hoping that he's going to show up to bring in his car.
Oh, like a little operation sting. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
So at 3 p.m., the car arrives to the shop and they are all excited and ready. And they're, you know, just waiting for their minute to pounce.
Yes.
And when the car door opens, it is his mother dropping off the car.
Ooh.
So either they knew or it just was luck. It's really hard to tell.
Yes. Okay. He's like, wow.
So they don't know Phil's location at this point, but they figure wherever she's going, she's got to be going to him at some point. Mm-hmm. So they start to trail her. She goes to a supermarket and she is followed by a person in a Subaru, in a red Subaru right behind her.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems a little odd, but again, you can't confirm because you don't know who it is. And then they decide, you know what? Screw it. Let's just take our chance and see. Like, I'm about 90% sure it's him. 10% is not. If we're 10% wrong, it's fine.
So also they're probably like, they're like waiting for them to come out of the store. And then that's when they're going
to. No, they decide to just pull him over when he gets into the parking lot.
Oh,
like okay. The whole debate was, do we stop him if we're not sure? Or do we wait until we get a confirmation?
Ooh, okay.
Normally it's wait until you get a confirmation. But considering the risk and the fact that like they had a very small window, they took the gamble and said, let's try. And if we mess up, oh, well, too bad.
Okay.
So they pull the red Subaru over. A gentleman steps out and swears that he is not Phil, except he looks exactly like Phil. So he tries to give him a different name. And at first, they're kind of confused because, of course, there's a chance that there's error.
Mm-hmm.
So then they pull up the DMV image and he is an exact match.
Ooh.
But for a small second, if a different cop had made a different choice and trusted his word, he would have got away.
That is wild to think that if the police officer would have like cross-referenced like whatever the DMV file was on the system, It's like he would have escaped. And then what? He would have ran and left town. And who knows where he would have gone?
It would have been so much harder to find him.
Exactly. That's just wild to think.
And wherever he would have gone, he probably would have kept up with the same scheme.
Oh, totally agree.
So they take him in and they start to list his charges and he denies all the charges. They're able to get a search warrant for his house and it is a gold mine of medications. There is so much evidence that it's like, it's just overwhelming. So wow. They start to find papers of receipts of at least a decade old. It's like literally a hoarder's house. They find bags and bags of clothes. They find Phil's bottles of diazepam. Why do I struggle so much with that?
Yeah.
He clearly knew what he was doing. He had an old computer that was found with searches made on how to acquire diazepam, chat rooms with people obtaining diazepam, a book was found on how to have sex with straight or heterosexual military men. So obviously he had like a niche. Pornography DVDs were found from a local shop. And then a person testified that they had actually gone out with Phil to Tijuana for like a night out and that he was sexually assaulted and drugged by Phil.
Well, it's like you're talking about. So being a border town and having TJ Tijuana right on the other side.
Yeah.
There's thousands of people that go to Mexico to get prescriptions filled and they bring them back.
Phil did that.
Oh, he did.
Some of his medications were bought in Tijuana.
It's just wild to think because people do that.
And it's so much easier to get over the counter medications over there than it is here.
Yeah. Like sometimes all you have to do is just find a doctor and tell him like, I'm looking for this.
He literally had an assortment of variations of multiple bottles of pills, but some of them were sorted in Tijuana and some of them were from here.
Wow.
Which is insane because it means that he didn't plan on running out anytime soon.
That is wild to think. That's insane.
At this point, they have identified him as a serial rapist. In the 17-month span between William's death and the crime in 2009, they fear that they have been way more victims. They release his photo in hopes of getting additional victims to come forward who had not reported the crime.
Like you said, like probably like out of embarrassment, people didn't come forward. You know,
I can see it. I wouldn't judge someone for not wanting to do that. I could understand why.
Yeah.
You don't want your name or your face out there. You probably feel like you did something wrong, even though you didn't. But yeah, that victim shame is also there sometimes. So I totally understand it. It sucks that it's there in the first place.
I agree. I totally agree.
So he was charged with kidnapping and assault in 2003 regarding an incident that happened in Arizona. He was arrested in San Diego, but before he was extradited, the case was dismissed. And it's so confusing because when a case is dismissed, there's not enough to really see like why or what happened or where the ball was dropped.
Yeah.
But in 2003, that was 5 years before. Like if he had been processed for that,
Dane
that would have saved Dane's life. Yeah. Yes. And it's so frustrating to know that he was already on a radar and then he just like gets let go.
Yeah. It's heartbreaking.
During the trial, there were at least four victims that testified to being abused by Phil.
Four victims. At least four.
In addition to the Navy men and Dane. So that's six.
That's wild to think.
So they determined that Dane's cause of death was by asphyxia, mm-hmm, which is choking.
Well, yeah. Like if he, you know, was motionless and was probably like, say, for instance, if it was face down on the floor or on the bed and you couldn't move, yeah, you suffocate.
You know what I always love is to hear the defense attorney's claims.
And what did they claim?
You guys know this is my favorite. So they claimed that all you can really prove in this story is that they were together the night before. Mm-hmm. Right. So I feel like they're almost trying to guide it. Like, you don't know if he was there willingly. You just know that they were both there. And then they say, you can't prove that he murdered him. How do we know that he didn't wake up next to a dead body and then just displace of him, which isn't as bad as having murdered him? Oh my God. How does that make sense in anybody's head?
There's no logic to that. It's.
And they even went as far as to say, at least he placed it somewhere where the body could be found. As in, you should say thank you. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
I hope he gets his money back. That is the worst defense I've ever heard.
It is.
Actually, no, we've heard worse with Bonita.
Yeah,
but you know what
I was about to say, Bonita.
Well, in June 24th of 2011, a jury took 3 hours to deliberate, and they found him
guilty.
Ah, good job. Yes, they found him guilty.
I hope so. I was like, hey.
Jurors found that the murder happened while he was there engaging in what they titled as sodomy and copulation of intoxicated victim. Basically taking advantage of him.
Yeah, it's like it's assaulting, it's sexual assault, essentially.
He was also convicted for sodomy and oral copulation of the intoxicated person for the assault in 2009 of the 20-year-old Navy corpsman who had originally came forward. He was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole.
So I feel like, you know, the unsung hero in all of this is the Navy man.
Oh, of course. No doubt about it.
Because of his unfortunate experience, tragic experience, we were able to catch Phil for the death and the murder of Dane. And, you know, at the same time, it's like preventing all these other potential, you know, serials, like because he was a serial rapist.
Oh, for sure.
There was nothing that was going to stop him from committing more rapes and taking advantage of.
He had all the ammunition he needed to continue going for at least a while. And he obviously knew he was a border hop away from getting more whenever he needed it. So.
Oh, yeah, totally. And it's just really wild to think, you know, and like, you know, looking at back at some of the articles, like I was able to find the quotes of the parents and saying that, you know, like it's still heartbreaking to see that Dane's not here. And, you know, that Jim Williams, Dane's father was quoted to say that he's a predator and he's evil monster and that he belongs at the bottom. He's like at the bottom of the prison, like tier where like, it's kind of like those who molest children and, you know, murder kids are like the first ones to get what they're coming from or to get their thing in prison.
Oh, yeah. John Gardner's first statement was like, well, I'll probably be dead in 5 years. Like, you don't know how prison works because of this.
Yeah. like you automatically have a giant bullseye on your back.
A target on your back. Yeah, for sure.
Because of what you committed. And it's like, that's what he was saying that was going to happen with Phil. And it's like, wow. It's just insane to think that someone just does this kind of stuff.
And it's so scary to think because every time you go out, you always hear, like, especially in your early 20s, people are telling you, like, be careful with your drinks and, like, you know, don't let anybody near them. Make sure the bartender pours it in front of you. Don't let it out of your sight.
Yeah. Or even then, too, like, don't accept drinks from anyone.
Oh, yeah.
That's like, I've learned that one, too. It's like, don't accept drinks from anyone.
But I think what helped him is that he would come off as a straight man, two guys. So their guard isn't up. If you're over there like, oh, check that girl out, like, you're not going to think like you're going to hit on me. You're like, oh, cool. Yeah, she's cute. And that would disarm them. And then that was enough to be able to gain their trust and then betray them and take advantage of them. Yeah. Yes. Which makes it even worse because you just don't see it coming in any direction.
Yeah. It's crazy to think. And it's just like, wow. Like he.
And like the fact that Dane was friendly and that he was just like a very vivacious and like all around like life of the party person. I feel like he was targeted because of that trait. And instead of like, he was taken advantage of because of that.
Yeah. It's just terrifying to even hear. And it's just like,
just sad.
It's unsad. And paying our respects to Dane William and his family. And may he rest in peace. So now we've reached the end of our episode and we have our SBS of the week.
Small Business Spotlight.
So this business that we're talking about today, I've learned they've been around in Oceanside for a very, very long time. But I never really did get a chance to go to it, but I was always aware of it. And I was like, man, this is really cool. Like, and the other day we got a chance to go there. And we're like, wow, this place is actually really cool. Like, it is your teenage nerd dream, like space dream, essentially.
Yeah.
What we're talking about is Killer Pizza from Mars. Now, this is a pretty cool spot because inside there, they have like, you have Star Wars, you have Star Trek.
You literally travel through time.
You do. But then at the same time, you also have all these other stuff too. Like, I saw Coneheads.
You guys, they had the Jetsons.
Yeah.
That had me like, oh my God, I can't even. Hard eyes everywhere.
The ceiling tiles are like, are airbrushed with like stars, asteroids. Like, there is action figures galore.
Yes.
In this spot. And
the amount of memorabilia they have from like all genres, anything space related, all time frames space related.
Poster boards, movie boards, action figures.
Puzzles.
Yeah. I mean, you
the helmets, the head figures, the stuffed animals, you're all looking of at, it.
You, even like the costumes, like there was like actual headgear costumes. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my gosh. Like, the only thing that they were missing was like Predator and Alien. Like, I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. And the food was good too. The food was amazing. It was really cool.
Yeah.
It's a nice little like nested in the corner right there off of El Camino and Mission. Killer Pizza from Mars. Go check it out. And let me know what you guys think.
The pizza was actually really good. It was very doughy. It was very fluffy. I enjoyed it. My only struggle was that kids didn't know how to play on a pinball machine. And like, I like felt myself like cringe. And then I tried to teach them and I realized that they had no idea what they were doing. And I'm like, I guess I don't know the point of this game.
Yeah.
It's just fun.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
So go check it out.
Go definitely check it out. And with that being said, like, honestly, like, it feels good to be back. Yes. And we do have these kind of moments. We're human. You know, we have our lives and we do our best here. And it's like, we love doing this podcast for you guys and sharing our local community stories to you, our local listeners and community listeners, but also everyone around the world to share like what San Diego really is about. And it's just like,
I am curious to know what everybody thinks. And if anyone thinks that like, if cops had arrested him, like, would that have had a different turnout? I'm just kind of stuck on that where I'm like, would like our officers trained to know the difference between being drugged and being intoxicated? I feel like it is important to know those differences. But I also don't know if we have that kind of education in our law enforcement at the time. And yeah. I didn't look into this. So this is just me. This is just me thinking out loud.
You hook your line out there.
Yeah. So before anybody gets like, and like, I did not do my research on this. I'm like, I might, because I feel like I want to go down this rabbit hole a little bit.
Yeah, I think but kind of worms.
I'm just curious, like, what if a cop had approached him? Like, would the outcome have been different? Would they have been able to see those signs or not?
Let us know what you guys think.
Yep. Make sure you tune in every Monday for your next dose of Where in the World is Crime in San Diego? Till then, catch us on the next case.
And in case we don't see you, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Tell me, where in the world is
Crime in San Diego? Hey,